on to Not Another Anxiety Show. I'm Erica Latham, and I am here today with Mr. Ellie Weinstein. Hi, Ellie.
Hey, how are you?
Good. I thought I lost you. I had been mispronouncing your name. You know, I had been calling you Eli, but as we'll see, it's, how do you pronounce your full first name for those that probably can't like me?
My first full name is Ellie Natan, which is a Hebrew name, but everyone just calls me Ellie.
Ellie Natan. I love that. Well, Ellie is graciously joining us today. He is a social work therapist who has worked in a psychiatric hospital, intense outpatient clinic, and currently works in community clinics in Queens. He created Elevation, which I had this whole time in my head been pronouncing elevation.org, but it's Elevation. And we're going to link you to, you know, the show notes and everything like that. But you've created that site to help fill a need for those struggling and to add extra inspiration and motivation into everyday life. He has gone through his own struggles with anxiety, ADHD, and men's issues, being a new dad, body image issues, relationships, and general self-esteem and confidence, just to name a few. His main goal is to help people on their journey to add support, care, empathy, expertise, and insight. He runs events, seminars, and individual coaching on topics from mental health awareness, public speaking coaching, relationship coaching, and confidence boosting. So thank you so much for being here. We're always excited to have somebody so passionate about what they do. And I'm personally excited to have a dude on the show. So hello.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Anytime. So you do a lot. You're a busy guy.
Some days more than others, but yeah.
And you are a new dad, you said, right?
Yeah, my baby, Ricky, is almost 8 months.
Ricky. Okay. Well, that's a fun age when they can sit up and start laughing at everything. And
yeah, and now she's going through a wonderful sleep regression, which is so great for my wife and I.
Well, like I mentioned before you and I hit record, I've been craving real conversations with real people about their real lives and passions and struggles. And I'm always pumped. I'm always intrigued when someone's struggle becomes how they make a difference in the world. And it seems like you're really on the path to doing that. You're really making a difference. In fact, you were just on the Kelly Clarkson show, which is super exciting.
Yeah.
And, rumor has it she's pretty nice. So it's always nice to hear when celebrities that seem nice or actually nice, you know?
Yeah. I also got a very inside scoop into who was nice and who wasn't from the drivers that took me to and from the airport. They gave me all the.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. It was fun conversations.
Well, next time you're on, that's what we're going to talk about. Just a list. I'll put it together. So Ellie, how did you get into this world of, you know, this passion of making mental health better?
All throughout growing up, I was, you know, pushed onto taking medication for my ADHD, seeing psychiatrists, psychologists, therapists, going through the struggles of not really getting social cues, impulsivity issues, being extremely emotional, which is one of the side effects of having ADHD, and one of the powers. And it took me a long time to understand that what I was going through was powerful, and that it is a superpower that I try to utilize, that I am a more social being now because of all those struggles. I am very much in tune and self-aware to my emotional states, and could talk to the wall if need be because of those powers that I have. And that being said, I love helping people. It is something that I believe is my passion. My purpose in life is to be loving and caring to those that need it. And it's something that has driven me to do a lot of things and push myself further and further in what I'm doing every day.
Wow. I don't know if I have heard anyone else describe their emotions and the emotional journey that you go through and have gone through as a superpower. But honestly, that's the way I feel. I'm coming up on 5 years of recognizing my own struggle with anxiety specifically. And I celebrate every single year because it's my superpower. It's exactly how I'm going to make a difference in the world. So that's really, really cool that you mentioned that. And
it wasn't so easy. It took me a while to get there.
Isn't that the...
It took me a while.
I'm just sort of thinking of, as silly as it is, and it's actually not silly at all. I mean, there's all these amazing, you know, Marvel superhero movies and shows and Netflix series of origin stories. And isn't that the hero's journey? Is, you know, it's messy and it's gritty and it's, there's a point to it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Even the greatest superhero, I don't want to get into a conversation right now. Who's the greatest hero? Marvel, DC, but I have a lot of friends and myself who are huge fans of both. But if we look at the classic superhero like Superman, mm-hmm. who was born with these powers, wasn't powerful on his own planet, but until he came to the struggles of Earth and was an outcast, did he learn who he truly was?
We're going to need to have a whole nother. So or we already have an episode. You're coming back on to talk about being a dad, which we haven't even mentioned, where you're coming back on to tell us who all the terrible celebrities are. And now you're coming, we're going to come on and we're going to talk about Marvel versus DC, but that's a whole, listen, that we've got our summer planned. So I don't want to lose the thread of the hero's journey, but it's making me think of something else, which is you're very open and honest. And you even said that before we hit record, you're an open book. You've been through so much. Why is it hard? And this is such a huge question, and I don't mean to spring something so loaded on you, but it seems hard. Let me rephrase this. It seems so hard for men to be emotionally honest. I'm a woman. I happen to be a gay woman who doesn't have a problem being tough. That's sort of my world, you know? But I have the emotional flexibility to do that. And it sort of seems unfair. It seems unfair that we live in a culture. And are you still in New York? I'm in upstate New York. You are, because you said that you work in Queens.
Yeah.
It's, you know, being in the Northeast, being in America, we have a culture, it seems, of demanding vulnerability from everyone, including men, and not really allowing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I think Brene Brown says, you know, I love Brene Brown, says something about we want men to sort of die on their white horse.
Yeah.
Do you, being a man at all, period, and two, being a man in this world and being a therapist, I mean, what do you think? Is that our culture?
Oh, what a big question.
I know. And I was trying to chunk it down.
No, but it's a great question. I love that you quoted, first of all, Brene Brown, who I would love to meet one day.
Oh, I know.
Brene Brown, if you're listening, I would love to meet you. But
if she's listening, I can hang my little hat up right now.
No, but there's a person that I always love to quote when it comes to men's issues. And I talked to him once in a while. He's an amazing resource. His name is Lewis Howes. And one of the things that he talks about in his books, Masks of Masculinity, is this concept of, for years, before any of us were around, back in the long, long time ago, men were known as the strong one, the, you know, be a man, be, you know, be strong, stand up, fight for the family, protect us. It was this idea of strength, which the roles have adjusted, changed, moved, whatever you would like to put a word to it. And it's not only just the man who can do that, and probably wasn't the man who could do that back in the day either, but just what is was assigned. But that is the issue when it is looked at as weakness. For some reason, emotions, and I had a client today who told me that he was crying to his wife for 20 minutes straight.
Wow.
And he was embarrassed.
Really?
Why? Because he said, I can't cry. I got to be strong for her. I said, no, it's okay to cry because you were struggling and you needed her to support you.
Wow.
You needed her. And he was embarrassed to cry to his wife, who he's been married to for over 11 years, because he felt that it was a sign of weakness.
You know, what's funny, well, not funny about that, but as you're talking, I'm thinking, I bet that's an aphrodisiac for a lot of women, you know? And at the same time, though, there is a double standard of, you know, do we want the man who cries, you know? And I don't have an answer for that, but I wonder, you know.
Some girls like an emotionally in tune person. And then sometimes the funny thing is sometimes girls get frustrated that their man is not in touch with their emotions and isn't, you know, connected to the emotional side that the woman needs. So it's funny how sometimes it goes both ways with that. Oh no, too much emotion, can't handle it. Or no, I need the emotion. Where is it? Why is he not crying? Why is he not sharing his emotions with me? Why is he not this? So it's a kind of a frustrating process.
You know, what's interesting about what you just said is that I never heard this before, but as you're talking, it made me think that's about the woman.
Yeah.
Or the partner, let's say partner, you know, makes it about them instead of this is what this fella needs to emote, to, you know, express himself. Instead of, you know, it's really about, well, this is what I like in a man instead of, well, what does that guy need to feel human? Yeah. Well, anyway, it just seems like we have a culture of especially telling men to just rub some dirt on their emotions. You know what I mean? Like,
it is changing little by little. Yeah. There is more a conversation about what it truly means to be a real man, which means to be human, which means to be in touch with your emotions, to be vulnerable, to be open, to be conversational, to be less than. You don't have to be the macho man of the past. You don't have to be this suck it up, deal with it all the time. It's okay to be human and be that way. So I hope it changes, and I hope it's a positive change. And just like there's a huge change in the female world of it being stronger and being powerful. Yeah. It was always there. You know, I gotta tell you, from watching my wife give birth and the way she raises my child, she is damn strong. So it's just the idea of the viewpoint of society on that changing.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Do you think, you know, doing the work you do and having the experience you have, are men actually emotionally different than women? You know, do we have different needs, or is it just sort of cultural indoctrination?
That's a very loaded question, because I think it depends on each man and each woman.
Okay.
And their past and their experiences, you know, if there's trauma or there's certain where they grew up and what culture they grew up in. I know certain cultures have different views on emotions, whether it's the Asian culture or the Latino culture, or more keep it to the chest. Even black males versus black females, it's very different. And from where you're from can change exactly how you want to share your emotion and who you share your emotions to and with is very different for person and for place.
It's true among women, absolutely, you know, so why wouldn't it be between genders and cultures? And, you know, it's funny, you saying that, I was sort of thinking we have, I don't know what the right term is, we have specific genres, maybe they are quote genres of therapy for certain subgroups. Like we have women's groups and we have therapy for women and therapy for LGBTQ+ and ethnic groups and older populations. And it doesn't seem like we have a big subgroup for men, you know, maybe there isn't the demand for it, but, you know, maybe it's, I don't know, it's like a chicken or the egg thing, you know, do we need men to demand it? Or
not even show up. Because it's embarrassing or whatever. But I know I used to work at a place called The Bridge in the city. It's an outpatient clinic and a day program, and they had a men's group. I know the clinic that I work at now has a boys group for teenagers. I think it depends on the place and the need, but you're right. There are a lot of subcategories and genres of groups that are offered for many different people. Yeah.
That's amazing that, you know, the availability for educators and program directors to see, yeah, we need kids to talk. We need boys to talk, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. and to find a different way to communicate. That's awesome. Tell me if you don't mind, because we are, you know, the name of our show is, you know, not another anxiety show. So we love anxiety. how do you, you know, on personally, if you don't mind, what does that look like for you now? Cause I'm sure it's changed as you've gotten older and, you know, I'm looking at your website, you're very open about ADHD. Those obviously go hand in hand. What does it look like now as a therapist and a father and a husband?
It's funny. When I was younger, I always had a quote unquote nervous stomach. Always in the nurse's office. I felt like my best friend growing up was the nurse. It was one of the first places I would visit when I switched schools when I was younger. My mom would show me the nurse's office. Here, you know where it is. Okay, we're good now. So it was always a nervous stomach, and then I was able to deal with it per se. When I got older, I didn't really notice my anxiety when I was in my early 20s. Of course, I would get nervous like everyone else. I would get anxious for certain situations. But it really hit me more when my wife was pregnant and we had our baby about 8 months ago. I had a severe panic attack the first month of my baby's life, which opened my eyes and was a very humbling experience as a therapist to see the other side of what it really truly feels like to have a severe panic attack where you have to end up in the hospital. Thinking you're dying, but really you're not. So it was a very interesting experience and very eye-opening. And now it's a really in a check with mixture of therapy and a nurse practitioner and conversations and taking care of myself with mind, body, and soul. I think, you know, each day is a struggle, but a lot better than what it was.
First of all, that's incredible that I would never wish a terrible panic attack on my worst enemy. Yep. I really wouldn't. But if it had to happen to you, I'm so glad that you're taking the perspective of, oh, I can understand my clients in a different way.
I don't know why I think that way, but that's one of the first thoughts I had was I have so many clients who've described panic attacks to me. And I've, you know, read all the books and learned all the things and the tricks and the tools. And I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But when it finally came to me doing it myself, I had like this moment of clarity of, wow, so this is what it's like.
Yeah. It's like, it must be maybe therapists need to be induced into this. like when cops go to training and they have to be tased to know what it feels like, you know, every therapist should have a panic attack induced upon them.
Most therapists have had panic attacks.
Everybody has. What do we know now? I mean, everybody in their life struggles in some way, and whether they get stuck in it or they have a panic attack and move on, you know, it's like 100% going to happen.
Yeah.
A lot of our listeners are stuck. Mm-hmm. You know, we find, and Kelly, my co-host, and I have been in this boat several times where anxiety feels sticky. You take it personally, you know, where I will never get out of this. I'm going to be like this forever. And again, that's a, you know, a totally ubiquitous experience. You know, anybody who's stuck in that feels that way, but slicing it down by gender, it's just simply easier for me to walk into a therapist and to cry than it would be for a guy, you know, mm-hmm. or, you know, somebody who, and it isn't just men, but here we are, you know, and it wasn't easy for me to walk into a therapist, and I don't want to discount that for any woman. This is obviously, you know, across the board, but because you are a therapist, did you find that walking into that office easy? Was there shame involved? I guess what I'm asking, and I'm tripping myself up here because I'm so excited about it. When you've clearly moved on from this experience, not moved on, but you're dealing with it healthily. Mm-hmm. Did you feel shame or, oh my God, I'm a therapist. I can't believe I'm struggling with this. You know, what was the echo of that panic attack experience?
I'm grinning ear to ear because you said exactly what I thought. When I went through the experience, I thought to myself, what the heck is wrong with me? I'm a therapist. I know the tricks. I know how to do the breathing. I know how to control my mind. I know CBT. I know mindfulness. I know relaxation techniques. What is going on? Why can't I do it? And I realized that I just, because I was so involved in it, because it was me, I didn't have that objective perspective that is what therapy is so beautifully done, is someone else not involved helping you through that journey, which in the end, I did feel shame. I felt a lot of shame. That was the biggest, and I think the hardest part of it was not that I had anxiety and a panic attack or anxiety, because that happens. I've known anxiety all my life. It's as one of the books that I've read called Dare. It talks about anxiety being your friend. It's there. It's always there. And you notice it and you go, hey, what's up? But that's fine. But the fact that it made me feel so little, and I felt so destroyed and terrible, that's what would kill me the most. I was so ashamed. And it took me a little bit of time and self-reflection to realize and snap out of it and say, why would I be ashamed? This happens to so many people. The percentages and statistics are so huge in regards to people having anxiety. I am no different than anyone else. You know, if a doctor gets sick, no one goes, what the hell's wrong with you? How could you get sick?
That's true. That's a good point.
Like, oh, you get sick. Doctors or no doctors, people who are in any profession, if they get whatever negative of that profession, you know, a person who's into tech and they don't know how to use a certain technology, oh, what's wrong with you? You're a coder. You should know how to do this. No, I'm a therapist. Doesn't mean I'm always put together. Doesn't mean I'm always perfect. Just because I'm objective in other people's lives doesn't mean I'm always objective in my own, and usually not objective in my own life. And it needed someone else and extra help. And because I'm a therapist, I knew the resources and I knew that I needed to go and outsource to get the help I needed.
Okay. Wow. That's so true. I never thought of it that way. I mean, if my doctor gets sick, I don't think of them less as a doctor.
No, because they're human.
Right. Well, like, but that's the thing. Like, wait, that's anxiety? Right. I mean, we're big fans of calling it, you know, and it's not, you know, we're not coining this phrase, but it's a human emotion. We are human. Unfortunately, it's chronic. You know, you're going to die as a human too. And it can be so hard to get that, no pun intended, or maybe all the puns intended. I can't tell yet. Let's see where this goes. But to get that elevation, to get, you know, that perspective from the stickiness of that anxiety is so, so hard because we take it so personally. I can't imagine what it's like to feel as low as I felt when I was in the thickest day of the thick. And on top of that, to have the additional stigma and weightiness of it just not being, air quotes, okay to deal with that, you know, yeah, as a guy.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah.
How do you get guys in to talk to you? Or do you? Are you standing on the street corner like, here's some beef jerky? Come on in. Come on in, buddy.
I got weights. Don't worry. Let's work out at the same time. it's actually, if I would, unfortunately, I don't have the choice in who I work with yet because I am working in a bigger clinic. So it kind of whoever comes my way. And sometimes, men choose to work with females because they feel more comfortable. Okay. Not trying to psychoanalyze here and get into maybe they feel like it's their mother or whatever. Who knows? But sometimes men feel more comfortable talking to a female because it feels more sensitive and more calming and more relaxing. And sometimes they want that guy, that bro, to talk to. I would say that my caseload is right now is I have like about 40 something people. I think it's maybe 50, 48, 52. You know, it's pretty close.
Okay.
Split down the middle between men and women of all ages. So it is an interesting thing. But yeah, it's a great question, and it's not so easy. Not so easy.
Yeah, I don't know. I get the vibe, and I could be wrong, but I get a vibe. You know, all my friends are girls because I'm a girl, you know, and I get a vibe that my girlfriends, buy all the self-help books, and we all love Brene Brown, and, you know, and you love Brene Brown, so God bless you. But, that is a way for us to improve, you know, hashtag blessed, and, you know, sort of the Instagram stuff. And I take it very seriously. All my friends actually do some sort of making fun of us, but, you know, I think a lot of us take that, especially women, we just have the freedom to go and buy, you know, a million self-help books. And I get the vibe that guys don't go and buy those books to improve. It's almost like they approach any kind of therapeutic anything as if they're in trouble.
Or waiting.
Yeah.
And it's something that I've noticed on Instagram and on social media, which is why I started doing what I was doing, was because I felt that there wasn't a lot of men talking about issues and honesty and transparency about issues about men or any issues as a whole, because of that. And there are so many, in such a good way, there's so many Instagram accounts for moms and for, you know, moms who are doctors, moms who are lawyers, moms who are this, and women who are that, and women who are this. And it's beautiful that there's so much support out there and so much access. And I was looking around, and I even talked to my wife about this, and she notices it also, that there's not a lot of things for guys. There are like a handful of men who post a lot of things that are productive, helpful, and have some validity or some importance to it that people connect to. Other than that, it's just guys posting pictures and muscles and like workout things and like, look how much, you know, alcohol I just drank or something. Like, I'm not demeaning that. Like, if that's how you want to post on social media, go for it. But it's not as productive as I feel like so many women out there are so driven to help others and to help others succeed and be productive and successful. It's beautiful, but I that's why I started doing what I do.
And I do think it's important, because you've mentioned this a few times, it is beautiful that, you know, we have strong female voices and strong voices that are minorities and any marginalized population that needs to have a voice. That's incredibly important, obviously. And I think it's also important to recognize that the folks that have traditionally have done the marginalizing need to have a chance to find themselves here and to find their voice and to sort of help with that, you know, human uplift, to sort of make a grand statement about it. But I'm real excited about what you're doing. Real excited.
Thank you.
Yeah. What is so tell me more about Elevation. Now you do all kinds of stuff. You do public speaking coaching and relationship coaching. And do you want to talk a little bit more about what you've started?
Sure. Something that I'm very passionate about is helping others grow in whatever sense that means to them. And as someone who did struggle with social cues and social anxiety, I worked very hard on those things. Specifically public speaking and relationships and picking up those kind of signals, I try very hard to help others, because in the end, the source of it all is lack of confidence and love and power from within that is able to shine through. And I have a few clients that I work with. I've spoken a couple of times trying to, you know, speak more and help more people. And it's something that I hope to continue for many, many years, to really, really help those who need a little extra love.
Yeah, you're doing that, you know, and it takes kind of like having that base of building that, but you are definitely making a difference. Really? What would you say, and I don't want to keep you because I know you got to get that beautiful little daughter up. Ricky, you said, right?
Yeah.
My name's Erica, obviously. My mom, for a minute, tried calling me Ricky, and that was shut down.
My daughter's name is Rebecca, and we thought that was a little too fancy, so we liked the name Ricky.
All right. I love it. If we could, and I don't know, this is way too big to sum up in one conversation. I'm just really excited to bridge the gap that we know we have between men and women who listen to this particular show, and we want to make sure that everyone feels welcome. But if there was any advice that you could give in getting men specifically to open up about their journey or struggles, and we've been reached out to some really brave, amazing men, and I would never call them out, you know, in public, but you know, we've encouraged them, you know, talk about your story. How can guys start this? Where do they even look to for help?
I've been noticing recently, the past 3 weeks, I've been looking into more like getting involved with other men's groups. And I've noticed a few of them on social media. It's all about finding them and searching. And also, it's about if you really care enough and you're passionate about sharing your story, go for it. There is no reason in this day and age to not be able to do it, whether it's a blog, whether it's a podcast, whether it's a Facebook group, whether it's Instagram account. There's so many opportunities to give support to others, because I would put money on, if you are going through it as a man or as a woman, I promise you there are about 10 to 20 other people who have very similar, to an extent, stories as yourself, whether it's anxiety, depression, whether it's trauma, whether it's parenting struggles, whether it's relationship issues, whether it's intimacy issues, whether it's job issues, anything under the sun, just start talking. And I know it sounds so simple in theory, but it's so difficult to just start talking to others, start spreading your story, start reaching out to people who you think might need help. If you need extra help, get help. Don't be afraid to start. And all it needs is just to start. That's all it is. It's one baby step to hopefully open a lifetime of self-reflection and self-love and openness that could open so many doors and so many opportunities that you just don't know yet because you're afraid to even take that first step.
Wow. I couldn't agree more. And that's how I started. I wrote about my struggle with anxiety on Facebook. And I was terrified. Being a woman, it didn't matter. Gender didn't matter in my mind, but terrified.
Vulnerability is vulnerability.
Amen. And I got message after message after message from people that I didn't even know I knew, who said, me too. Absolutely. Yeah. I feel this way too.
Really funny that you mentioned that. My wife and I, we went through our struggles of infertility. And we collaborated with an organization to post our story in a video. It was like a 4-part video. And we were bombarded in a good way of people sharing their story, reaching out. Oh, my goodness. I have 4 or 5 friends who are struggling with infertility. Wow. Can they reach out to you? Oh, my goodness. I didn't know you went through that. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Oh, my gosh. That made me cry. Thank you so much. And We knew because I think it's like 1 in 7 couples struggle with infertility. I think that's the statistics, whether it's both spouses or one partner or whatever it is. But it's just nice to know that someone else out there is going through it. And you might know it and assume and think. And in the end, when someone starts talking about it, it opens people's eyes and opens doors for the conversation to start. No matter how stigmatized or taboo the conversation is or not, it's important for people to talk and just get things out there.
Yeah. And I mean, as we know, that you know, opening that door is a pressure release valve on a lot of this anxiety stuff anyway. So awesome. Yep. Is there anything else I'm missing now? I know we can find you on Elevation. It's ELIVATION.org, right? And you're on Instagram and Facebook, and I'm missing something. Twitter, YouTube?
I have a Twitter account that I just, it ends up just sharing everything that I share from Instagram. So.
Okay. All right. What else? What else can you think of? And we definitely want to talk to you again, but you know, just starting to gently prod the boys. Just
guys, if you need help, girls need help, just reach out, start the conversation, just start it. All it takes.
Now, before I do my, ending spiel, who is the best superhero?
That's a whole podcast. It'll depend on were they created with powers? Were they?
All right. Okay.
I'm a big fan of Batman just because of how.
Really?
Dark. I don't think he's the best superhero. I just like his story and what makes him who he is because I'm a therapist and like all that trauma stuff.
Oh, you'd love a Superman or a Batman.
Yeah, all him therapists. And
oh, yeah. All right.
Too good.
That's a different podcast. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much for being on today.
No problem.
That's our episode. Thank you for tuning in today. If you are enjoying the show, please subscribe and write a review on iTunes so we may reach and support more people. As always, visit notanotheranxietyshow.com for more resources or if you have a question that you would like answered on the show. Until next time, remember, be kind to yourself.